Welcome to Management Matters, a National Academy of Public Administration podcast where policy meets practice. I'm Terry Girton, president of the Academy. On this episode, we'll discuss the role of the Federal Emergency Management Agency in supporting community resilience with our guest, David Grant. David is an Academy Fellow, a longtime government senior executive who retired from FEMA, and founder of Potomac Ridge Consulting. David, thanks so much for joining me today.
Terry, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, I know that these are busy days for you, so we'll jump right in.
Okay.
Last November, the Academy released its list of 12 grand challenges in public administration. And this month, August, we're focusing on one that you've been personally involved with for a long time, building resilient communities. So thinking about your FEMA experience as the Associated Administrator for Mission Support and the Acting Deputy Administrator, what do you think of when you think of resilience? What does that term mean to you?
Well, to me, it means proactive rather than reactive. So many people spend a lot of time thinking about how to respond and recover from a disaster. They don't spend as much time as they need to, either on a personal or professional level, preparing for what might be a disaster. And resilience, to me, means that you have prepared yourself both personally and for your job, for your profession, for what disaster may come. So to me, it's being proactive. It is not thinking about it, using FEMA speak for a moment, during hurricane season, but thinking about it all year round. It is, again, thinking about how can I prepare both myself and my organization if something bad happens? And do I take and then take the steps both in planning and in budget and in resource commitment to actually prepare myself and my organization to handle a disaster that may be forthcoming? That is undoubtedly will be forthcoming in some form or fashion. As we used to say at FEMA, there's no such thing as earthquake season. You know, that could be happening at any point in time. So you need to be prepared for any manner of disaster, and you need to plan for it and try and put in pre-disaster mitigation plans and resources ahead of time.
Well, the planning and preparation is something that we all think about, and sometimes it gets hard to do in real time because of the tyranny of the urgent sort of. And so a lot of times people expect FEMA to kind of come to the rescue, right? They expect you to be the provider of every kind of assistance in a
yes,
disaster
they do.
Emergency. Help us understand what FEMA thinks its role is.
Well, it's not just what FEMA thinks. It's actually in all of the planning documents. FEMA is not the first responder to a disaster. FEMA looks at it this way. It is federally supported, state managed, and locally executed. And the reason it is that way is because wherever the disaster is, typically speaking, the local officials will have a much better understanding of what the local community needs than would, let's say, even the state, but certainly the federal arena. So for the federal government to come in and try and take over first responder, number one, we couldn't get there in time. Number two, we wouldn't know the lay of the land. Number three, we wouldn't understand what the local community's capacities are in real time to be a first responder. So FEMA goes by, as I said, the statement is locally executed, state managed, and federally supported. So we support the governor. The governor is the person who comes in and says, our state has been overwhelmed by this disaster and requests federal aid. If that's approved by the president, then we will come in and support the governor. The governor then determines how that support is dispersed to the local entities. And usually that only happens when that state is beyond its capacity for that given disaster. So I think it is important for people to understand that very often when a big disaster hits and they're watching the evening news or podcast or whatever social media might be today, they will see pictures of the FEMA truck and they'll see lots of people walking around with FEMA jackets. But they need to understand that they are there at the request of the state governor to provide aid and assistance, which is beyond the state's capacity at that time. And the governor then determines, and the state management organization as part of the state government determines where that disaster aid will actually be dispersed.
So David, that's clearly FEMA's role in disaster response. Do they have a role in mitigation as well?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, there's an entire organization in FEMA about national preparedness, because we have study after study after study that will show that the better prepared a locality, state and locality is for a disaster, the better the response and recovery will go. We used to use a comparison that for every dollar spent in mitigation would save $6 in recovery at a subsequent disaster. So think about, and it's hard to say, you know, you don't quite know where the disaster is going to happen, but we know that in the Gulf Coast, you're going to have hurricanes. If you can spend money in pre-disaster mitigation funding to fortify public buildings and utilities and hospitals and make them more secure from the expected hurricane that will eventually come, it is much easier to restore that building. The damage will be significantly less if pre-mitigation dollars are spent there. So FEMA spends has an entire grant program, multiple grant programs that both assist pre, during, and post disaster. And under Brock Long, the previous administrator for whom I was the acting deputy, he advocated and was able to shift a significant amount of money to pre-disaster mitigation funding. I'm not sure this is going to be the exact number, but I think it was around $200 to $300 million was shifted from post-disaster to pre-disaster for the specific purpose of helping communities prepare for disasters that they can reasonably expect will happen. So FEMA does play a role. They help the localities plan for that, and through dollar resource allocation can help them fiscally prepare for it as well.
We're talking about how FEMA has these grant programs. How does FEMA actually work with the states and localities to do that planning, to build the responsive networks? How do you actually get engaged on the front end to support that planning and preparation?
It's a great question. And we have 10 regions, all headed by regional administrators. For example, here in Washington, D.C. area, that would be Region 3 out of Philadelphia. And they would take the Mid-Atlantic states. Region 4 down in the southeast would take the southeast corner. And it goes around the country that way. Those regional administrators work, frankly, on a daily basis with the state emergency management offices from each state in their region. And they work with them, as I said, to prepare for planning. They run exercise programs with them. And those exercise programs are not just for the sort of obvious things such as a hurricane or an earthquake, but also chemical spills or radiological disasters or any number of different things. FEMA is what's called an all-hazard agency. It is responsible to represent the federal government for all hazards, biological, radiological, chemical, natural, you name it. FEMA is supposed to be there. So we actually run an exercise program with our state counterparts to help them prepare for. And the other thing that I'll tell you that I really admired about FEMA working there was their ability to do after action reports. So after every significant disaster, FEMA goes in and does a study of how they did. And that includes the federal partners as well as state partners. And then they write a fairly extensive, and I mean binders thick, of a report on the after action report. And then they take that information and they feed it to their partners, state and local and federal, and they feed it into our training program so that, you know, as people study how to be prepared for a disaster, they're getting relatively real time information on what went well and what didn't go well. And the last thing I'd say is, we used to say at FEMA all the time, there is no such thing as a hurricane disaster, because everyone is going to be different. You know, even if it comes into the same state, every disaster is going to be different, even if it's a hurricane and you have another hurricane, it's going to affect that locality a little bit differently. And you have to be prepared for all manner of different effects.
It's really a good reminder for us to recall that FEMA is not just focused on hurricanes, although that's sort of where the common perception sure. lies, but really that focus on all hazards. And that sort of takes me back to the mission set. We talked about response. We talked about mitigation. How about recovery? What is FEMA's role in recovery?
Well, that is a huge, huge portion of the mission. It's frankly the largest portion of the mission, but it is the portion of the mission after the cameras leave. You know, during the hurricane, you will see all the national news trucks there watching, you know, the storm come on board or the immediate after effects of the earthquake, et cetera. But it will take not days, not weeks, and not months, but in a major disaster, it will take years and sometimes a decade or more for the recovery to actually be fully implemented. And FEMA will be there the entire time. And so, you know, we have public assistance grants that will spend literally billions of dollars if it's a major disaster. And that will be working with the state to determine, number one, what was damaged. Was it previously damaged and therefore not eligible? Or was it damaged from the storm or the earthquake or whatever the disaster was? And then we will work with they will work with engineering firms, and we will work with them to validate that, you know, the solution to that. Then we will release funding for it. And some of those projects will take a long, long time. You know, entire road structures built, bridge structures, all kinds of things will have to be rebuilt. And so that recovery will be there for a long time. It is where the bulk of the money is spent. And also we build into that recovery the resilience that you talked about from our first question, which is we generally want to build back to a better standard so that the next disaster that comes is not going to be affecting a 50-year-old building that was built to substandards. It's going to be built to today's standards, and therefore making that structure or infrastructure, whatever it might be, more resilient for the future.
Put a pin in that resilience because I'm coming back to it.
yes, ma'am.
I wanted to stick with recovery for a minute because as you were explaining FEMA's role there, it made me think about all of the other federal agencies who come into a recovery operation with their own grant channels and their own assistance mm-hmm. programs, along with nonprofits and community organizations that come in to help. Who's the central coordinator in that sort of example?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm going to differentiate for a moment between response and recovery. Response is the immediate aftermath of the disaster. So that's what you see on TV. And generally speaking, FEMA is the one coordinating for all of that. So we'll take housing as an example, because we partner a lot with HUD to in housing. So in the immediate response nature of a hurricane, where there is a housing mission, which means a significant portion of housing for those people without insurance, renters or whatever, has been negatively affected. FEMA will step in with what's called individual grants or individual assistance to help people find shelter. You know, our mission is to help save lives and provide shelter and so on. So they'll step in that regard, and that's what we call short term. The longer term housing would be done by HUD. So they'll come in after the fact, sometimes 6 months or 12 months down the road, and they'll help, you know, entities rebuild the apartment complex. A public housing complex, for example, would generally be helped by HUD, because they have their own grant, emergency grant support that they will do that way. So we try and complement each other. I will give a shout out to Brock Long as our former administrator. One of the things that he was advocating with the Hill, and I don't know if it's had a whole lot of traction yet, but I will take a second to put a pin in it, as you say. I think there needs to be, and I'm really parroting Brock, so I can't take this idea as my own, but Brock's opinion was, and I fully support it, is that there needs to be a better level of cooperation and understanding so that the money that FEMA might spend in the housing area complements what HUD will eventually do, because there are sometimes different rules of engagement on what we're allowed to spend money on versus what HUD's allowed to spend money on. Both of them completely proper, but they don't necessarily you know, slide together like a wheel, you know, they, or, you know, like a tong in the wheel. So I think there needs to be spent some time studying that to figure out how they wouldn't be contrary to each other at some times, as they might be, but complementary to each other. But we do work very hard with agencies like HHS and HUD and others who might be there also in the recovery through their own funding sources for the long term. And we do try and coordinate that support.
Is there something we should be thinking about to make that coordination easier, more effective, simpler localities?
Yes. Every grant program is different. That's one of the things that we had started prior to my departure was a grant management modernization program. One of the things that, and Bob Fenton was leading that, and he's one of our strongest leaders, obviously, in FEMA. He's the Region 9 regional administrator, and he was the lead for it. And I went out to a couple of the sessions where we met with the grantees in the public sector from all the states. And I remember sitting there and listening to them. You know, if you think about the city of Los Angeles or the state of California, they're a large recipient of federal grant money. But even from FEMA, which has a couple of dozen different grant programs, the criteria for each of the grants is slightly different. The nomenclature is slightly different. And so when you're at a state or locality and you have to fill out Form X one way and basically the same information for Form Z, but you have to fill out a different way using a slightly different nomenclature. Now multiply that around FEMA, which as I said, has several dozen grant programs. Then you compound that because you have HUD, you have HHS, you have Interior, you have National Park Service. You know, you have a dozen or two dozen other federal agencies that might have grant money available, and they'll all do it a little bit differently. And even if it's just a couple of percentage points differently at the local level, that is very complicated because they don't have the resources to have a grant manager for this program in FEMA, another grant manager for this program in National Park Service, another grant manager. They might put all their federal grants in one office with two people. And there might be 30 or 40 different grant programs, and they've got to manage them all differently. So I think there could be a much better coordination around that level. But that will also cause statutory changes, because a lot of that implementation is based on the statute that was passed. So that would be a complicated one to take on. But I think it would be very much appreciated by the state and local counterparts, our partners there.
Yeah. So until we get to that nirvana, is part of the preparation that we talked about, the planning in advance, sort of laying in those plans for accessing all of those different grant streams?
Yeah, I think it starts in the preparedness area, because there are grant programs that that are helpful for state and local, and they can bid on, put a proposal in, and hopefully we can support them in that regard. And then in the immediate response of the disaster, that's when we actually, if I've seen it, you know, every agency is in our NRCC, the National Response Coordination Center. Well, COVID is making that a little bit different because we're physically separated in most parts, but let's say a traditional NRCC, you know, the Geological Survey is sitting next to the National Weather Service, which is sitting next to the EPA, which is sitting next to HUD, which is sitting next to Defense Logistics Agency. And down the line, there's dozens and dozens of federal agencies and the state coordinators that are present in the NRCC. Then you have the regional command center also set up for those state and local folks to participate in. And a lot of that information is exchanged there. So, for example, when we were working the housing mission after Hurricane Harvey, now Texas is a very well supported, disaster supported state. They spend a lot of resources preparing. That was an odd storm because it was very slow moving. 55 inches of rain fell over a 1 week period. Areas that hadn't flooded in decades and decades were inundated. We coordinated in advance. During the response, we developed a housing plan with HUD and the state so that they could start using FEMA money and HUD money and their own money in a coordinated fashion. It was a very new way of doing business, and it required us to work a lot with OMB, right up to Director Mulvaney at the time. And it took a lot of coordination, but we were able to pull it off. And I found that to, you know, at the time, I thought was a success.
Well, it's certainly a challenge. And so it's good to know that there are experts at the NRCC who can kind of help the localities pull that together. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of come back around to the resilience idea. FEMA is a fairly young federal agency.
Yes, it is.
and you've got emergency management in the title of it. How did the understanding of the resilience function kind of evolve over time? Was it a mission shift? Was it a better understanding?
I mean, I only worked at FEMA for a little over 5 years, so I am not a historical FEMA expert. But, you know, it was first created by President Carter, but it has morphed. You know, it has evolved and grown, and it has moved. You know, when DHS was created, it moved into DHS and then came back out. So it was a standalone presidential commission, basically reporting into the White House, and then it moved into DHS, and now it's back out part of DHS, but it's a standalone component. So it has changed and morphed over time. It has certainly grown. I mean, the philosophical approach of the federal government helping states and locals recover from disasters goes back, you know, many more decades from that. But it was sporadic. It was a one-time event here, a one-time event there. And it wasn't until President Carter, if I remember my FEMA 1 directive reading it well, you know, brought it together into a unit and said, we're going to develop this. So the idea of resilience really grew after that and grew subsequent to that. I think people started noticing that a significant amount of money and time and effort were being spent in responding to disasters. And then that response led to a longer term recovery, because it's, I don't want to say it's easy, but the first couple weeks of a disaster, you know, it's all hands on deck. You get people into hotels or into temporary structures of some kind. The storm passes, the water recedes, and we have fed people and housed people and clothed people. And then the storm is gone and people start to recover. And I think people recognize that really there needs to be a longer term effort than just that immediate response. And so the recovery effort grew within FEMA. And then I think people recognize that there can be work done prior to that. That's the proactive rather than the reactive. FEMA is extraordinarily good at reacting. It's frankly one of the best in the world. I have to say it was amazing to watch those folks in action. And they have in the last 15 or 20 years really developed the preparedness effort to match it. And as I said a few moments ago, one of Brock's you know, tenets of his tenure there was to focus even more resources on the pre-disaster mitigation grants, because as I said, you know, FEMA uses the formula for every dollar you spend in pre-mitigation disaster for a subsequent disaster, you save $6 in their response and recovery. So I think more growth has to happen in that area, but that takes, again, a change in philosophy at the very, very, very top of government, in both the executive and legislative branches of government that, frankly, doesn't have to have a capital R or capital D next to it. It doesn't really matter. Disasters strike, you know, both red and blue communities. And the more time and effort we as a national community, and certainly state and local, put into preparing for and committing resources to building codes and structures that will withstand disasters that are at least known to occur in that area. If you're in an earthquake zone, building to those zones. And that's one of the things that Craig Fugate, as the previous administrator prior to Brock, used to talk about. Building codes were terribly important. There is no such thing as a national building code. Every locality, even within a state, will have their own level of building codes. But for national disaster preparedness, we need to think about building to a certain hurricane or earthquake building code.
And there's a lot to think about there. And so I want to throw one more thing into that mix. Notwithstanding our earlier conversation about FEMA being all hazards, I'm going to go back to hurricanes.
Sure.
We're being told we're facing a very active hurricane season. At the same time, we've got a nationwide pandemic. And many of the areas who would be at most risk from a hurricane are also in the very high transmission mm-hmm. stages of the pandemic. What are emergency planners thinking about right now to try to get ready for what would be, I guess, a normal sort of hurricane response in very abnormal times?
So that's a great question. And the answer is they're trying to think of everything, which is the a short answer to say that they've got a very full plate. Listen, the folks at FEMA have been, I don't want to say overwhelmed, but truly this pandemic is the first national disaster that we faced. Literally every regional command center, coordination center has been activated. We have folks in every state that are activated to support our state and local partners. And we are coordinating with virtually every federal agency already. So that's just going on with the COVID response. And as big as Katrina might have been, that was still, you know, primarily Region 4 and Region 6. And of course, other regions and states flooded in with support, but you didn't have disasters declared in the rest of the country. We have declared this as a national disaster, which puts a great strain on FEMA and its federal partners. So I think FEMA has done a remarkable job if you look at it in that context. Second thing is they have begun to transition a lot of that COVID support to HHS and DLA, for example, to do a lot of the supply chain management and such as we prepare for what National Weather Service has said will be an above average hurricane season. You know, we never can tell with predictions, but you know, if the National Weather Service is telling us it's likely to be a heavy season, we need to be prepared. The second thing FEMA now has to prepare for is a hurricane season where we must be socially distant. And that comes into play in virtually every manner of the disaster support. So just keeping it internal for the first part of my answer is we have an NRCC that we can't put 300 people in for the one 12-hour shift, flip them out, put another 300 people in for the next shift, because those people are literally sitting, you know, 2 feet, 1 foot from each other. They're just lined up, you know, row after row after row after row. And they're designed to that way so that like agencies are sitting right next to each other so that their coordinators can look right across a very small desk at you, Terry, let's say, and say, hey, what are we going to do about this problem? Let's answer it. And we put it in the system. Now we're having to create socially distant. So they're creating other spots in the building for people to sit. They have alternate site for the NRCC in another building. So they're just spreading everything out. And during a disaster, sometimes it's very good to be looking at somebody eye to eye, and you can make decisions maybe in a more informed and better fashion. So they have to rely more on systems for communication, and that stresses, you know, already stressed systems. But they are preparing for that. Secondly, that same situation will be out in the region. So wherever a hurricane might hit, is typically we'll set up a joint field office there where you would bring in at the state level, all the federal folks and state folks would report to the state JFO. So think about a hurricane hitting somewhere in the East Coast in North Carolina, let's say South Carolina. One of those states would set up a JFO, a joint field office, and we would flood people in. We are communicating, obviously, with states that they need to sort of mimic the NRCC approach, which is you need to be socially distant, and we need to do as many things from a distance as we can. So you're going to see a lot of telework during a disaster now. That's all the internal stuff. But now you talk about the interface with the population, with our citizenry. And that's more difficult to do during a disaster from a socially distant standpoint. So we're trying to move and communicate with the state and local folks that we're trying to put, when you sign up for individual assistance, for example, we're really trying to push people so that they're prepared to do so online. that presupposes that you're going to have access, that there will be cell towers that are operational. So they have to plan for that as your plan A during COVID, but plan B is maybe they won't have access to the systems to allow that. So we're going to have to still have people that can go around and physically sign people up. We have to make sure that they have the appropriate PPE as they're meeting with folks. Then you get to maybe a third level and maybe the most important level. If housing is affected, for example, our traditional way of supporting that is that we might take over a YMCA or a high school and we'll put cots up all across a gym. You've seen that on TV, you know, unfortunately 100 times, and you have cot after cot after cot after cot, and you put people and parents and children and elderly and young, and you know, they're crammed into a high school gym, and the American Red Cross will show up and serve meals in long lines, and people will go back in. That will be very, very difficult during COVID. Matter of fact, they're now making plans to have a different kind of housing support where we would push people to hotels, which means you're moving, you know, the hotels in the local area might be overwhelmed. So you're pushing people further and further away from their community because you don't really want to put together during COVID a tightly packed in community housing solution. So you're going to push people further and further away to take up more and more hotel space so that they can have their own room to themselves and be, you know, hopefully safe from the pandemic. So it will put a stress on the system, but FEMA has come up with an exercise book in planning for all that. They've distributed that to every state emergency management office, and they've run exercises, especially with those in the hurricane zones, to try and plan for whatever eventuality might come from it.
But I have so many more questions.
Well,
part of it is that I'm glad I'm not a resilience planner because this is a huge responsibility.
Absolutely.
So we're glad that FEMA's engaged with the professionals to help them prepare for this kind of situation. I wanted to switch to one last question, though. You're currently in the private sector consulting space, helping organizations with their strategy and program management. How are you advising your clients right now? How do you help them build resilience for the kinds of situations we've just been talking about?
Well, one of the things that that we tell people, we told people this when I worked in FEMA as well, is it's hard to help other people prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters if you yourself are not prepared for a disaster, able to respond to a disaster, and able to recover from a disaster within your own personal self. And you've heard me mention that a couple times, so I'm going to come back to that in a moment, and your professional responsibilities. One of the things that we've talked a lot about at FEMA is the individual needs to be prepared. We all, not we all, but most of us have families. And, you know, is your family prepared? Are you prepared if a disaster hits your area, that your family is going to be protected, that they will have a place to go? Do you have cash on hand? You know, how many people have $200, $300, $400, $500 cash on hand? Because if the electrical system goes down, you can't get to an ATM. Local retailers will not take your debit card. It's a for that 1 or 2 or 3 days, it's a cash-based society. And especially with this newest generation, they're probably not prepared for that. So one of the things that we emphasize and that we even talk about during our consulting part to companies is if your company is not prepared to weather a disaster, then you will not be prepared to support the agencies who are your customers in a disaster. So really the first part of any entity to be to prepare for disaster is to make sure your personal self and your family are prepared and make sure your immediate organization is prepared. Do you have a communication tree? Do you have backup communication? Do you have access to your supply chain? You know, whatever the case might be. So that's the first part. The second part is that, and I used to tell people this when I was head at running procurement at FEMA, working for FEMA is a wonderful, it was a great way to cap off my career. I genuinely mean that. I loved it. The mission is second to none, truly. It is. You have to feel good every day you're going into work there. And the same can be said. I used to go to industry association meetings constantly, And I would have huge companies that come up and say, I cannot get my people off your project because they love it, because they're helping people. You know, if you're building an infrastructure or a communication system, it was very interesting. And I hate to drop names, but or company names, but I was at an industry association meeting, and I had the vice president of federal for Verizon and the vice president of federal for AT&T, and the three of us were talking, and they were complimenting each other, and they were complimenting FEMA, and they were both saying the same thing that, you know, at whatever the recent disaster was, they were both responsible to help us set up a communication network because cell towers were out, landlines were out. And for a couple of weeks, it was, you know, they were bringing in massive amounts of their own equipment to support us. And, you know, when it was all said and done, they both said the same thing, that their folks were reluctant to come off the project, even though their work was done, because they got such self-satisfaction out of it. So what I tell companies is, it really is a privilege to support FEMA during that mission, because you really are helping people in their time of need. At the same time, it's very difficult because you're going to be asked to do things that may not be as clear as you're used to it. And the job is to get it done, and we'll clean up afterwards. You know, never do anything illegal or wrong or unethical or anything like that. But when it's time to get something done, because you know, life and shelter and property are at risk, it's time to get it done. So that means that you're going to have to take in your supply chain, for example, stuff that you might have committed to your biggest customer and take it off their shelves and ship it to FEMA. And that will annoy your customer base like you wouldn't believe. And that's what you're going to have to do when you sign up to work for FEMA. And I never heard a company say they wouldn't, or said they didn't. But I tell them that up front, you know, be careful what you ask for, because when you get into this business, you're there for the mission, and it's all hands on deck.
Well, David, thanks for giving us a peek behind the curtain and how FEMA works and how it works with its intergovernmental partners to build community resilience. And thank you also for the reminder that resilience begins at home, so to speak.
It does.
And so thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
It was my pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
For our listeners, check back every Monday for a new podcast from the Academy. We'll be talking to Academy fellows each week about the challenges facing public administrators at every level of government as we try to make government work and work for all. Thanks for listening.